And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 140. Woo! Yes, we love our round numbers. Yeah, for no apparent reason, but yeah, because there's nothing particularly special about this episode. Speaking of round numbers, though, we've hit a milestone, folks. It's a small milestone, but a milestone nonetheless. We now have 50 members of the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group. And, you know, 50 members is not a lot when you compare it to some other Facebook groups, but you know what? It's a lot more than some. Anyway, so welcome to Sam Lakey, who is the newest and our 50th member of the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group. Welcome along, Sam. And as always, thanks very much for joining us. So I do have one more plug to do before we get on with our review this week, and that is a long-missed podcast. It's been off the air for a couple of years, but now it's back. So y'all go over to twotruefreaks.com and the Two True Freaks Podcast Network and check out Tales of the Justice Society of America. Scott Gardner and Michael Bailey, they do a great job with that series. That is one of the podcasts that inspired me to start my own. And they do a lot of great stuff over there on their show. I mean, right now they're talking about All-Star Squadron. They've talked about Infinity Inc. They're going to probably be talking about Young All-Stars coming up here pretty soon. And of course, the Justice Society, the other various aspects of it. You know, they did some of the All-Star comics from the 1970s, which of course reintroduced the JSA to a lot of us out there, including me, and introduced characters that we really kind of take for granted in the DC universe now, but were brand new back then. Power Girl, anyone? Yeah, so really, really good stuff over there, and I'm really, really happy to see them back. All right, so we actually do have an issue of Thor to cover, so let's go ahead and move along to our review.
Cross the Rainbow Bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, Mighty Thor.
And this week we are covering the Mighty Thor number 168. Has a cover date of September of 1969, retailed for 15 cents. Cover art is by Jack Kirby, though I'm not sure who the inker is because it sure doesn't look like Coletta. And I'm kind of assuming that it's the same inker that is inside the issue, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Cover shows Thor, and he's standing somewhere, some sort of planet or something, and there's no background, so you really can't tell. And he's whirling around Mjolnir like he's going to smash the person who's reaching out to grab him with a giant purple hand. I speak of Galactus, and this is Galactus wearing his short pants, which is the look I really don't care for Galactus. Now, interesting point of trivia here. This is the oldest issue of Thor in my own collection. This is, you know, I don't have a continuous run of Thor by any means, but this is one of those older issues that I was able to snag for cheap, and so I actually have the original of this in my collection. I would use the original to read out for this show, but the original is kind of brittle. It was not stored very well, so I'd kind of tried not to read it too much. Anyway, so we open up to the splash page where, of course, we have the credits. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby produced this issue. We have a guest embellisher this time being George Klein, and this issue was lettered by Art Simic. The title of the story, Galactus Found! Exclamation point. And we pick up where we left off last issue. We have Thor, and he's in the spaceship where, you know, he went in last issue, Odin sending him off into space to go find Galactus, which means that it didn't take him very long to find him. They make it sound like, you know, it could be years and years before he finds Galactus, but clearly we find him this issue. Anyway, so there's some sort of a technician or something. He's saying, The Enchanta screen is ready for viewing, sire. And Odin is talking to Thor.
Lo, Thor doth await my final command. Thus the time hath come to speed him on his quest in search of Galactus. He doth sense mine eyes upon him.
Well, maybe he knows you're always watching because you have all these cosmic voyeuroscopes everywhere.
He sits and now awaits his father's pleasure.
Oh my.
Alas, my son hath grave penance to pay for the sin of warrior madness. Thus he must depart without ceremony, without the hero's farewell, which is his due. So be it then. In the name of eternal Asgard, by the power absolute which is his due, I will the Odin ship depart.
And the ship takes off into space, and Odin's like,
and so 'tis done. My son hath gone. Gone to seek Galactus, whose power doth challenge mine own. Blood of my blood, may fortune find thee. For if thou shouldst fall, thy father's heart would wither too.
And we see the Odin ship, I guess they're calling it, taking off into space, looking a lot like a World War II bomber in a couple of these shots here. But of course, soaring out over Asgard, the Eternal City, though it's all colored blue. So, and yeah, Asgard is blue today. And we see on the next page, the ship is taking off through Kirby space. And yeah, in a lot of these panels, it really looks like either one of those old Buck Rogers rocket ships, or maybe World War II B-1 bomber, whatever the hell they were. And you see he's taking off, and there's lots of planets and moons and stuff. You know, typical Kirby space. And of course, we love Kirby space. And Thor's talking to himself out loud in the ship here.
Now goes Thor, where man or god hath never ventured. Still, the quest be done. The emptiness of space shall be my home. But such is the will of Odin. And though I be the god of thunder, still I be my father's son. Still must Thor obey. And what of him whom I must find, when at last we two shall meet, which shall be the victor, and which shall fall to rise no more?
Now, I think that Thor's kind of lost the plot here. He's not going out to kill Galactus. He's going out to find Galactus and bring him back to Asgard to parley with Odin. I think that was the agreement there. And so Thor goes stalking off into the bowels of his ship. And I take it from what Odin was saying last issue that he doesn't really have a lot of driving to do. This is a sort of just kind of driving around at random until he finds Galactus. And we see the ship is streaking past the planet Earth. And of course, we now shift scenes to what's taking place on Earth, where we have Baldur, who's being discharged from the hospital. And you know that he's being discharged from the hospital because he's got this big bandage around his head. And Baldur is talking to the doctor here. He's saying,
"That was Dr. Blake, whom you have to thank for saving you. I know of no other surgeon who could have performed the necessary operation."
And Baldur's thinking to himself, "For in living truth, no other surgeon is also God of Thunder. 'Twas Thor himself did save me.
Blake was in a hurry. I've never known a man to come and go so suddenly. At any rate, he left that message for you. Though I fail to see how you'll be able to decipher that illegible scrawl."
Well, you know, doctors have illegible scrawls. I mean, isn't that the whole point?
"Though it be meaningless to mortal eyes," thinks Baldur, "to Baldur it is crystal clear. He hath begun the quest, but in so doing leaves Earth unguarded. Fear not, noble prince. Here in thy stead shall Baldur stand. Here in thy name shall Baldur fight."
"I told you wouldn't be able to read it. I don't see how a man like Blake could be so careless about his handwriting."
Baldur saying, "There be much thou didst not see."
"I thank thee for thine endeavors on my behalf," says Baldur. "And now Baldur must take his leave."
Now, it just seems to me something's wrong with this picture. Actually, there's something wrong with this entire scenario. Wasn't Baldur supposed to be invincible? Yeah. I mean, the only thing that didn't swear not to harm Baldur was Mistletoe. So how could this clay statue affect him? You know, magic or no? Yeah, that was just kind of interesting. Anyway,
"It seems you have friends waiting for you in the anteroom."
And Baldur's thinking to himself, "Friends? In a place where mortals dwell?" And he heads out to the waiting room, and he's saying out loud, "Let Baldur see then who doth await him." And he goes out into the waiting room, and there's nurses pushing around, you know, patients and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, somebody shouts, "Defend thyself, varlet!" And Baldur draws his sword, and he's like, from around the corner, the threat of naked steel. And we see that it's the Warriors Three. They're just having him on a little bit. And it's Fandral, of course, with his sword. He says, "Hold, noble Baldur, we do but jest with thee. Dashing Fandral, Hogan the Grim, and voluminous Volstagg, do mine eyes deceive me?"
"Not so, Asgardian. Odin hath sent us to join thee."
"Oi, let evildoers tremble at the sight of Volstagg. My fighting heart craves battle. Lead me to a dragon."
"Thou knowest well there be no dragons, thou overstuffed oaf. What thou cravest is food, not fighting."
"'Tis good to see thee, one and all. 'Twill make the time pass quicker."
And the Warriors Three leave the hospital, and there's people standing around reading newspapers, and the newspapers have headlines like, "Crises in the Far East, Secret Atomic Blasts in the Orient." And Volstagg says,
"Yon mortals look alarmed. Methinks they read disturbing news. But whate'er may be amiss, the valor of Volstagg will soon put to right."
"Let us learn what doth disturb them," says Baldur. They go to the newsstand and they try to get a paper because, of course, you know, all Asgardians read English.
"Thou mayest hand me a paper, mortal," says Volstagg.
Yeah, soon as you hand me a dime, big mouth."
"What? Thou wouldst ask recompense of an Asgardian? Knowest thou not I am here to protect thee?"
"Look, I don't know what you're selling, mister, but nobody's bumming a paper off me without paying for it. Nobody."
And the old man takes his cane and he jabs Volstagg right in the crotch with it. I mean, that's what it looks like. It is a sound effect whack. And yeah, it looks like he's hitting him right in the balls.
"Forsooth, the gauntlet is hurled. Volstagg is attacked. But despite the odds, Volstagg shall not flinch. To arms, to arms."
And Volstagg is kind of lunging forward and Baldur's holding him back.
"I beg thee forgive the vociferous Volstagg. We do be comrades of mighty Thor, and mean thee no harm."
The way you talk, I should have guessed. Any pal of Thor's can have a paper any time. Help yourself, fella."
And Baldur grabs paper, and it's the Daily Viewer, so we know there's at least there's more than two papers in New York City at this time.
"We only wish to learn what problems plague thy mortal world."
"You want to know what problems we got? Just look around you, son."
The Warriors Three are talking among themselves.
"It matters not what foes we face. We shall be equal to the task," says Fandral.
"I sense grave danger near, and yet we know not the ways of earth or of mortal men."
"Then Fandral says thee, 'tis time to learn."
And we shift scenes back to Thor on the Odin ship, hurling out into space, and he's talking to himself again.
"Guided by the power of Odin, I journey on. On through the infinite reaches of the unending cosmos. Already my heart doth hunger for the sight of Sif, for the glories of Asgard and the mysteries of Earth. When, if ever, shall they be mine to savor once again?"
And he's kind of laying on this lounge chair, and he's got some sort of food there and some sort of pitcher of, I don't know, maple syrup or something. Anyway, and all of a sudden the ship strikes something or stopped in its tracks, and everything goes hurtling forward. And, of course, Thor, because he has to speak the obvious, he says,
"The ship lurches, as though struck. But with such a craft, it cannot be. In all of space, there is no asteroid, no planet, no natural force great enough to halt the Odin ship."
I would think that if you ran into a planet, it would be pretty substantial. But, anyway.
"And yet, the vessel doth not move. It hovers motionless, as though entrapped."
And so Thor goes to the top of the ship, opens up the big old hatch, and...
"I must learn what hath... By the golden gates of Asgard, what is this? No longer doth airless space surround me. The Odin ship is captured within a strange and mighty structure."
And we shift scenes again, and we're back on Earth. "Somewhere in the mysterious Orient," says the caption. "In a secret atomic research center." And we have these, they're Asian scientist soldiers sorts of people. I'm pretty sure they're communists because, you know, all the villains in Thor comics are communist. And they're like,
"The project is at last completed. Thermal Man lives. It has taken years to create him,
but it is time well spent. For his is the power to bring destruction to the accursed free world.
Yeah, okay, so they're obviously commies. And they're kind of in this really futuristic lab sort of thing, and they're looking through a window at some sort of a figure we really can't see. And they're saying,
the radiation level rises. The monster begins to stir. Then the time has come for the most important test. Guard, stand ready. With a single thermal blast, he has atomized his chains. That means no earthly power can hold him. He sees us through the plexiglass. He has turned. He begins to lunge. Look out. He prepares to strike the wall.
And there's a giant spakoom, and this big blue hand comes reaching out through the hole and smashing the wall. And this really dumb-looking robot comes ambling out of this. I guess he's a robot. But there's these big blue, kind of dorky-looking robot. He's got a big, kind of dome head, and his fingers all are flat on the end and have holes so he can shoot rays and shit out of them. And he's destroying the wall and the machinery with a bunch of, like, laser beams coming out of his fingers. And the commie soldier's like,
he's stronger than we knew. Stop him! Stop him! It is useless. Our puny weapons cannot affect him.
And this is looking really familiar, because this is just like a lot of these Journey into Mystery stories.
Nothing can stop him, save the sonic shell. And even that will fail, unless it is used before he reaches his full power. The shell is on his way, but we dare not wait. Bring up the stun gun.
And they bring this huge, like, I don't know, it's a big gun of some kind. They call it a stun gun. I don't know what it is. It's obviously not like a taser. Oh, it's a real big taser. And they point it at him, and the thermal man is destroying all the machinery and stuff. And they're like,
fire! He must be stopped, so we may program him anew.
And they shoot the ray at him, but it's too late because the thermal man has destroyed the gun or destroyed all the machinery that they're standing on with a big blast. And they're like,
too late. He shattered it with but a single thermal blast. Only the sonic shell can stop him now.
And then this giant tank thing arrives, and it's this big cumbersome looking tank with kind of Flintstones rollers for wheels. I don't think it would work very well in the real world, but that's a Jack Kirby machine for you. Anyway, so there's these soldiers inside, and they go,
we have arrived just in time. In another few minutes, not even the power of the shell can stop him. But now, with his thermal strength still in the formulative stage, the sonic blast can vibrate through his entire nervous structure, causing him to topple.
And they attack him with a shell. It's just like a big old, like an artillery shell. And it hits him, and we get a bunch of magenta and yellow Kirby crackle lightning sort of stuff around him. And the thermal man falls backwards and is apparently unconscious, at least for now. And the communist soldiers advance on him. Then they're wearing uniforms that look just like World War II Japanese uniforms, which is kind of interesting.
We have halted him, but not for long. The atomic pile which gives him life still glows within his massive chest. He will soon arise, and with greater strength than before. Send for the launch trailer.
You mean the time has come? The West will feel our blow at last?
Yes, the thermal man must now begin his journey. Bring him to the rocket.
And there's like this big tow truck sort of thing, and it has a winch on it that winches the thermal man onto like this it's like a truck bed. And hauls him away to this space shuttle looking thing, quite frankly. It's this big winged rocket. And the soldiers are like,
the fools of the free world knew we were making atomic tests, but little did they suspect we were creating an artificial thermal being. A humanoidal engine of destruction who cannot be stopped, cannot be slain.
Oh, so the destroyer, in other words.
Only one purpose has he, and one alone. He shall bring the Western world to its knees. Such is the purpose on the fate of Thermal Man.
Thermal Man, Thermal Man, does whatever a thermal can. Oh, sorry. So I guess it's fortunate that they didn't say exactly where in Asia they were launching this rocket from, because it only takes a few minutes to make it all the way to the U.S., which seems to be incredibly fast, especially in 1960s technology. But anyway, it says minutes later, high above the western coast of continental U.S., and there's some, like, Air Force people and jet fighters are like,
a missile from across the Pacific? Why would they attack with only one?
Well, we'll worry about the reasons later. Blast her out of the sky! And the jet fighters shoot the big rocket with missiles, and with a big butchung, they destroy the missile, and there's all the shrapnel and stuff falling into the ground. And amongst all the shrapnel is the thermal man himself. They don't notice that he's kind of falling down. And he strikes the ground, obviously really hard, but all that does is wake him up. And we can see that as he crashes to Earth, a tree has been killed. I'm sorry. There's tree murder! We then shift back to Thor's spaceship, and Thor is deciding to explore what's outside of the ship. He's crawling down this ladder on the side, and of course he has to repeat everything that happened over the last couple of pages. The Odin ship hath been stopped in flight, and is now confined within yon strange and nameless structure. Thor must learn what hath occurred and why. There before have mine eyes beheld such edifice as this, and he's walking through this, super futuristic Kirby machines and all this stuff. From whence did it come? And for what awesome purpose? Awesome, dude. But wait, I see an exit hatch. It seems to beckon me. I'd like to see it beckoning him to him. Come on, Thor, come on through the door. Oh, and then it actually does beckon to him and says, Son of Odin, step you forth. And Thor's like, Who speaks? What being hath the power to trap the mighty Odin ship? The one you seek. The one who is possessed of power beyond measure. Thunder God, behold Galactus! And he steps out. So, you know, it only took him a few minutes or a few hours to actually find Galactus. So that was a stroke of luck. It's almost like they planned it that way. And Thor's getting ready to fight. He's like, Methought the quest would take an age. But since the time be now, then Thor shall do what must be done.
Asgardian, it is not my wish to battle, says Galactus.
Battle we must, since thou art Odin's enemy sworn. Thy power bids fair to rival his, but eternal Asgard must ne'er be threatened. And Thor strikes forward with Mjolnir, but it just sort of bounces off like an energy field of some kind. And Galactus is like,
You strike in vain. My Galactian barrier now stands between us.
Now this is Jack Kirby dialogue.
Did it not occur to you that I have awaited your coming? You stand before me because it was my wish that I be found. Galactus is weary of the chase. Now there is much that must be said. Much that I have thought upon. For lo, these untold ages.
And I noticed that in these panels, Galactus is wearing his fully clothed uniform, the one I like better. He's not wearing the shorts and short sleeves like he is on the cover.
And now to speed your understanding, I unleash a Visi-cloud. Its mist shall penetrate the fibers of your body, the inner reaches of your brain. For you must see what I shall tell you, and what you see you must believe. And so you shall, and so you shall.
And so Thor's hallucinating on this space LSD or whatever it is that Galactus has just zapped him with. And he falls down unconscious on the ground. And he's hallucinating all these weird things. He sees this prehistoric world, and there's this sort of weird dinosaur lizard things, and Galactus is narrating here.
Ages upon ages ago, when galaxies were still aborning, when Earth was in its infancy, there was one being called the Watcher, whose eyes spanned the cosmos in a constant vigil.
And we see the Watcher, and he's, I don't know if he's supposed to be on Earth or what, and he's setting up this weird like camera surveying equipment is what it looks like, and he's kind of looking at the dinosaurs, I guess.
Now I tell of a day on a far distant planet when he witnessed the crash of a falling starship.
And the Watcher takes off in a sort of space scooter sort of thing and says,
It is a vessel of highly advanced design, built by a wise and ancient race, so powerfully built that it is only slightly damaged. But though all seems to be in good working order, where are the occupants? Where's the crew?
And he comes across a decaying corpse hand sort of thing. He's like,
That hand? Of course. I should have realized.
And we cut back to Thor, and he's saying, I see it! The Visi haze doth show me yon dread scene. 'Twas a plague ship that hath crashed, a ship of pestilence, with all aboard it dead. And Galactus is like,
You have seen but the beginnings of my tale.
Pledge me your word that you will stay your hammer's wrath, and I shall release you from the mists of the Visi haze. For it is your understanding I seek, and not your enmity. Then say thy peace, Galactus, says Thor. Thor shall not strike if there be no cause. So speaks the son of Odin. Then rise you now, God of Thunder. There is much that you must hear. And Galactus waves his hand, and Thor gets up. And we shift scenes back to Earth again, and we see the Thermal Man. And he seems to be approaching some sort of I don't recognize the kind of buildings these are, but supposedly it's in America. The Thermal Man is heading towards this town, and there's cars and trucks and stuff. I was created for one purpose, for destruction. I must do what I was born to do. I must not be found wanting. Before me lies a city to be crushed. And we cut to inside the city, and we find the Warriors Three, and they're in a motel room, and Volstagg is crushing all the chairs because he's just too fat to sit in them. And Hogan's like, "When wilt thou learn? The furniture of mortals is not for such as thee."
"Nay, Volstagg is truly grace incarnate. The wood itself is faulty. Methinks Don Blake should purchase stouter chairs."
So I guess they're supposed to be in New York City. Makes no sense, but anyway.
"Fandral, I have need of thee. Having broken every chair, Volstagg hath now crushed the bed."
"Surely it is no problem, grim one. Merely leave him on the floor."
"But what if that be next to crumble?"
Well, then it's not going to make a whole lot of difference, will it? And all of a sudden, Fandral notices something on the TV.
"Hold us, Guardian! There, upon yon screen, the image has suddenly changed. A calamity hath befallen the city."
And there's the TV images in black and white, of course, of the Thermal Man is rampaging through the city, people running away. He's picking up trucks and throwing them around. And the news report is saying,
"The public is urged to stay off the streets. We repeat, stay in your homes until the gigantic rampaging creature can be stopped."
"What manner of menace be that?" says Hogan.
"Never hath Fandral seen the like. He decimates an entire building with but a glance."
We see the Thermal Man, and he's basically smashing the buildings using his eye beams.
"'Tis good that Odin gave us leave to visit thee. Methinks 'twill be battle enow for all."
"To sword as guardians," says Baldur.
"Baldur, where thou shalt lead, we follow."
"Though the Thunder God be gone, this world he hath loved so well shall not be left unguarded." "So speaks Hogan."
"So speaks Baldur."
"So speaks Fandral."
"And so speaks Volstagg," and he's crashing through the door. He says, "If thou wilt but free me from yon accursed bed."
And we then shift back to the planet where Thor is laying on the ground still, and he's listening to Galactus's tale, and he's starting to recover from this hallucinogen. And Galactus is saying,
"The Visi mists now start to fade."
And Thor's like,
"A plague ship. I have beheld a plague ship filled with pestilence and doom." "You have but seen the start. There is far more to come. And so I say, awaken, Thor. The time is come for you to learn the why of Galactus."
And that is Thor number 168. Obviously, going to have a lot more to say about this, which, of course, we will hear right after this important message.
The Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, also known as C2E2, is a convention spanning the latest and greatest from the worlds of comics, movies, television, toys, anime, manga, and video games. Bringing the best of popular culture to downtown Chicago on April 25th through 27th, C2E2's show floor is packed with hundreds of exhibitors, panels, guests such as Adam Hughes, Brian Azzarello, Eve Miles, and more, autograph sessions giving fans a chance to interact with their favorite creators, and screening rooms featuring sneak peeks at films and television shows months before they hit either the big or small screen. Join us for the best weekend of the year, April 25th through 27th. For more info, head on over to c2e2.com.
And of course, Radio Free Asgard will be at C2E2. And I just found out we're going to be at table D4 in Podcaster's Alley. So if you're C2E2, stop by D4 and say hello. So, of course, I have a few comments about the issue, as always, and there's good things and there's bad things about the issue. And I'm going to start with the things I don't care for first. One of the things that I notice is that there's not a lot of Stan in this story. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but one of the effects that this has is that this issue reads like an early Journey into Mystery issue.
And don't get me wrong, I liked the early Journey into Mystery stuff for what it was. But it's not a good look in 1969. I think the book at this point has progressed past that. We don't have to have the evil communist villain and their indestructible robot. This reminds me a lot, actually, of that green android that Don Blake built back when it was at Journey into Mystery 90 or somewhere around there. I'm kind of glad also that they've moved past the days when Don Blake was able to create giant green androids. I don't know. It's just, to me, it's not a really strong plot. Art-wise, it's really good, but story-wise, not so much. One of the notable things about the art here is that we have a different inker this time around. Vinnie Coletta is absent now for the next two or three issues. And instead, in this issue, we've got George Klein. Interesting choice. I don't know that Klein's inking really works as well with Kirby as somebody like, say, Chick Stone or Joe Sinnott. But it's still a nice change of pace. One of the things that is really becoming apparent, and I know I've mentioned this before and I'll probably keep mentioning it every time, is that Kirby's style is changing. And I think that when you don't have the Coletta inks, that's made even more obvious. The facial structure of characters is altering as we go. This is nowhere more obvious than in the portrayal of the Warriors 3. Generally speaking, I like the Thor Galactus scenes. It's weird that, you know, in this world of high-tech Kirby gadgets and all this machinery and, you know, inside Galactus' ship, you have all this, you know, fantastic, you know, technology and in Thor's ship as well. And instead of showing Thor his story on a view screen or something, he has to release a Visi cloud of hallucinogenic mists, and which is, of course, they later call Visi haze. I think they missed a real opportunity there by not making the Visi haze purple. It's weird how he has to put Thor to sleep in order to convey his story. It doesn't make a ton of sense story-wise, though it makes sense visually that, you know, he's going to do this and then Thor will be able to see this whole thing with the Watcher. Cool gadgets, by the way, in this Watcher scene. The Watcher has this sort of weird, I don't know, tripod sort of surveying thing that he uses. And then inside the plague ship, he discovers all this weird, sinuous machinery. It doesn't look very functional, but a lot of stuff in Kirby's art doesn't really look functional. And that's okay, because it's Kirby, and it looks awesome. Okay, so with that, it is about time to wrap up the show for this week. Once again, folks, thanks very much for listening. We really, really do appreciate it. Now, there's a couple of different places where you can download our show. Now, the main site, of course, is at radiofreeasgard.com, and all of our episodes are available. Now, I've had a couple of people say, well, there's only so many of your episodes available on iTunes. Well, that's true, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't figured out how to make it so that all of our episodes show up on iTunes. However, that really doesn't matter because all of the episodes are up for download over at radiofreeasgard.com. And if you want to download back to episode, you know, number 38 or thereabouts, you can also download our show over at the Comics Podcast Network, comicspodcast.com. You can find us over there as well. All right, so with that, we are heading back over the Rainbow Bridge, back to Midgard, and we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard. Radio Free Asgard is the property of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor, his supporting cast, and the various stories that we feature on the show are copyright Marvel Comics and are presented for review and educational purposes, and we hope you find them entertaining as well. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elvesmith, are copyright Motzvent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll tell your friends or leave us an iTunes review or even join our Facebook group. We do love hearing from our listeners. And if you didn't like it, well, oh well, we'll try to do better next time. Once again, thank you very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.